Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 21st, 2016. Civil society groups react to the teachers and judges' strike in South Sudan.
If you consider a teacher going for work every day, especially here in Juba, they need transport, they need water, they need food, and all of these things cost money. So if this money is not coming and prices are hiking and you cannot afford all these things, it becomes understandable that one cannot even afford to move from home to work.
And Enough Project says the Kiir administration must do more to fight corruption.
The Anti-Corruption Commission has come up with cases of people reportedly allegedly accused of misappropriating government money. For starters, we should be seeing, these people going through the justice system to establish the veracity of their criminality.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The executive director of the advocacy group South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections says a majority of people in South Sudan are not able to afford the skyrocketing prices of food items in Juba. Rajab John Mohandi says civil society groups are working with the stakeholders of the August peace agreement to find a solution to the ongoing economic crisis. John says people's patience is wearing out. He says the transitional government of national unity must update citizens on the government's efforts to address the deteriorating economy. He says the people are bitter and might resort to other options for survival.
We discussed with the citizens in our engagement with them to disseminate the agreement, to listen to their opinions that we can use as part of our advocacy information. And honestly, they raise lots of concerns about, first of all, the prices of goods, which have gone so high beyond their reach, and then the delays in salaries for them to be able to afford food for themselves. And also even getting some of the food items in some of the locations is very difficult, given the conditions of the roads and also insecurity in some of the areas.
How are they surviving? What are they telling you about their coping mechanisms?
People keep trying. First, you can see them trying to engage in whatever level of business they can, whatever they have. They try to engage in petty businesses to raise funds. The young people move out to wash vehicles, and then others try to get goods from shops to go and retail and get some difference. And women move around looking for work in homes to be able to get something to survive. And that's one, those who really try to struggle to get something. But also, you can see that the level of crime also has a kind of increased. And that's one survival mechanism for some people, unlawful kind of search for something to survive on. So there are different mechanisms people try to use. And that is especially in the cities. But in the villages, in the rural areas, people survive on whatever they try to cultivate.
What are you doing as civil society groups to work with the government to ensure that there's a solution to this problem? Because if people are sleeping hungry, that's not a good sign.
Well, of course, it is not a good sign. And on our part as the civil society, there are various ways we're trying to use in order to approach this situation. First, as partners to this peace agreement, we are represented in the institutions of the agreement. And most importantly, were represented in the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. So we use this representation to be able to raise the concerns of the citizens and to influence decisions in these institutions. We have been engaging with some of our representatives in these institutions, and we also directly make submissions to these institutions. And today we just had a meeting and we discussed the situation. The response of the civil society to the slow implementation of the peace agreement and also to the worsening economic situation.
University lecturers and professors are on strike. The judges in the country are on strike. And of late, teachers of primary and secondary schools, that's government schools, have also gone on strike. Is South Sudan sliding into a situation where there is going to be mass action because people are fed up?
Well, it's very unfortunate that these mega institutions are going on a strike, but their situation is totally understandable. If you consider a teacher going to work every day, especially here in Juba, they need transport, they need water, they need food, and all of these things cost money. So if this money is not coming, and the value of the currency is going down, and prices are hiking, and you cannot afford all these things, it becomes understandable that one cannot even afford to move from home to work. So when they take these decisions, it will seriously impact on, for example, education, on the rule of law for the case of the judges, but also we understand that they have no means to really raise their concerns better than what they are trying to do now.
Rajab John Mohandis is the executive director of the advocacy group South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, a network of civil society groups operating in South Sudan. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. Primary and secondary school students in Juba are disappointed their teachers failed to show up for classes today. Teachers in government schools have been on strike for 2 days to demand unpaid salary and allowances. Reporter Tito Justin visited 5 schools in Juba and spoke to teachers, students, education officials and parents about the strike and its implications on schools in Juba.
It's 11 o'clock in the morning and students are supposed to be in their classes for lessons. But there are no teachers at Juba Model Secondary School today. They are on strike this week for not being paid their salaries or allowances for 3 months. Some of the students are playing in the school compound and others are returning home. John Chiok Mabor is a third-year student at Juba Model. Chiok says he supports the teachers. He says education is the only viable way for change in South Sudan.
The condition of today that we are faced is really very deteriorating because we are the student. To come to school and not receiving any lesson from our teachers would seem like the hope that we have for our future as the young generation of South Sudan to come up with the objective and very good hope of changing this country will be in vain.
15-year-old Gondaliza Awutu is in primary 8 and will sit for a nationwide final primary school examination later this year. Awutu says she has missed a lot of classes over the past few days and those missed lessons will affect her preparation for an upcoming examination. This year, Gondaliza worries about her future.
You can live in a hard life without education. You can't be a better person in the future. That's why we are telling to the governor, let them help our teachers, so that they may help us also to be the better people of tomorrow.
Parents in South Sudan pay tuition fees, buy stationery and uniforms for their children attending public schools. Josephine Powell, her son who is sitting for secondary school final examination this year. She says the strike will affect the performance of her child during the examination. Speaking in Arabic, Powell urges state officials to address the grievances of the striking teachers as soon as possible.
We want the government to look on the issue of the teachers well. Let them give teachers what they want, such that children go back to school. If children stay home like this without education, they will leave home and become thieves and cause us problems.
Auxiliary Bishop of Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, Santo Lacupio, has also urged the teachers, judges and workers of the various universities to end their strike. And Jubek State Education Minister Wani Sule Ladu is also asking the teachers to call off their strike and resume teaching. Ladu says the state government will pay the teachers' demand this week.
We have already talked to them. We had appealed to them to be patient that in the next 1 or 2, 3 days, the governor or our government has promised to solve this problem. And we even appeal to them that they should have called off the strike as of yesterday of our meeting.
Despite a promise from the state minister, teachers say they want the state government to meet their demands first before they return to the classrooms. Nichox Lolik is the head teacher of Juba 1 Girls Primary School. He says some of their demands include transport, allowances, promotions and supplies.
I'm not feeling well because I cannot be able to stay in office as a head teacher, but there is nothing happening in the school. We just got the information that is an open strike. For how long, we don't know. The government is going to address the issue. We don't know exactly.
The teachers submitted a petition to the State Education Ministry last week demanding 3 months unpaid salaries and allowances be paid immediately. They also want their monthly salaries increased to match the high rate of inflation. Education Minister Wanisule acknowledges that some of the teachers' demands are genuine. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
A local civil society activist in Budwe State is concerned about insecurity in Yambio County over the last 2 weeks. Ahmed Bashir says at least 4 people, including a teacher and his wife, were shot and killed outside Yambio town. The Budwe State Police Commissioner says security has been beefed up around the town. Gift Friday reports from Juba.
Ahmed Bashir is the chairperson of the Human Rights Forum in Budwe State. He says recent killings in the state by unknown gunmen have sparked fears among residents.
Frequently, there are lots of killings in houses, but we don't know what is happening. And the situation is now so is not good. Despite the fact that there is peace, SSNLM is in peace with government, it is of high concern because now each and every community members are scared, are living with fear, because they think tomorrow is for him, today will be for me. We don't know why this killing and who are doing this.
Earlier this month, an identified gunman shot and killed 59-year-old Roto Zain and his wife, Antonita Zain, in Bakiwiri on the outskirts of Yambio town. Roto is one of the Azande writers and a veteran teacher in the former Western Equatoria state. 2 youths were also shot in the Sora residential area. One of the youths died on the spot. The other young man sustained serious gunshot wounds and is recovering at Yambio Hospital. Bashir is calling on state officials to speed up implementation of the peace agreement signed by Budwe State government leaders and a faction of the vigilante group known as the South Sudan National Liberation Movement.
So we need peace in order to cultivate and our children to go to school. So as human rights activists, we don't want an eye to eye. We need the rule of law. This is what we call for.
Budwe State Police Commissioner Major General James Mande Enoka acknowledged that several murders took place in Yambio over the last 2 weeks. Enoka says the police have arrested suspects who will soon be brought to the court to face criminal charges.
17 suspects have been arrested by the police and the investigation is going on. These are criminal cases. Actually, of course, as you know, crimes are antisocial. There is no zero area where there are no crimes.
Enoka says the suspects will appear in a court of law to answer questions under oath and be given the chance to prove their innocence. He tries to assure the public that the security situation in the state is under control.
Everything is normal, so we encourage all people who want to visit the state to visit us because the security situation is good. People are doing their cultivation. Now we have plenty of maize in the market and groundnuts.
Enoka says there are no reported cases of looting along the busy Yambio, Maridi and Mundri route that supplies the state with goods from Juba and East Africa. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization is asking for money to fight a new disease. We will have more on that after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite traditional folk story about?
About Anansi. Spiders, there are some way. Their stories are nice. Anansi has its own way of doing things, deceiving people and stuff. So it helps you to know the tricks of some people.
One of the favorite stories I picked up, The Hare and the Hyena. I like how tricky the hare, the character plays. Being his role, like how he has been personificated, is a very tricky character. So I used to enjoy that.
My favorite story is about Miss Ear and Mr. Mosquito. Mr. Ear wanted to marry Miss Mosquito. Miss Ear said that, Mosquito, you have tiny leg. How can I marry you? I cannot marry you to be a widow in future. That's why, you see, when you're sleeping, sometimes you hear a mosquito coming to your ears and making that sound. Eh?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
VOA. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the Zika virus. World Health Organization is appealing for 121 million to combat the Zika virus over the next 18 months. The revised Global Strategic Response Plan supplements a previous plan launched in February, which requested around $20 million. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The significant increase in the amount of money requested to tackle the Zika virus indicates the gravity with which the World Health Organization views this infection. The Zika virus, which is now circulating in some 60 countries worldwide, is linked to microcephaly, an infection that causes brain abnormalities in newborn babies, and Guillain-Barré syndrome, a neurological disorder. The epicenter of the disease is in Latin America. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says the response to Zika requires an integrated approach that places support for women and girls of childbearing age at its core.
This strategy will place greater focus on preventing and managing medical complications caused by Zika virus infection by providing counseling and treatment, if necessary, to pregnant women, partners, households, infected people, and will also work with communities trying to have enough of capacities at the health systems to provide a necessary support to communities.
The plan highlights several specific characteristics of the Zika outbreak that need special vigilance and a global response. They include the potential for further international spread of the Zika virus by Aedes mosquitoes. The WHO says a lack of immunity in areas where the Zika virus is circulating for the first time could allow the disease to spread quickly. It says the absence of vaccines, treatments, and rapid diagnostic tests, as well as inequalities in access to sanitation and health services in affected areas, are of concern and will require special care. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we return to Juba, where South Sudanese officials and mining experts say now it's a good time for investors to come to South Sudan and help develop the country's mining industry. As we hear from Nabil Biagio, mining experts have asked the mining ministry to enact laws that will encourage transparency and accountability in the mineral sector of the country.
Researchers and government officials gathered in Juba this past weekend to talk about how to develop South Sudan's fledgling mineral sector. Mining experts were speaking at a forum dubbed Ensuring Transparency and Accountability in the Development and Management of the Mineral Sector in South Sudan, an event organized by the Juba-based think tank Ebony Center for Strategic Studies. Michael Roberto Kenyi, the former Minister of Mining, says the country's mining industry can help stabilize the country's economy by creating jobs, especially for the nation's youth in rural areas.
Mining sector matters for South Sudan to generate revenue. Number two, to provide jobs and income. Number three, absence of viable mining sector makes it less attractive for people to stay in rural areas because there are mention of taking towns to the people.
Cosmas Pitia Kujo is professor of geology and mining at the University of Juba and advisor in the Ministry of Mining. Kujo says South Sudan has minerals at Hufra Nahas in former Western Bahar Ghazal, Kapoita, and the Didinga Hills in eastern Equatoria. He says gold, aluminum, copper, manganese, gemstone, and marble are abundant in these areas.
All that we want are investors to come and do the real work, not the artisanal work. And that is the first priority that we have already put in our ministry.
Kujo says effective and transparent investment in South Sudan's mining industry will boost the nation's revenues. But he warns that building the mining industry takes time, and it will be a while before South Sudanese will be able to enjoy the profits from mining precious stones.
This is the cycle. Such that you can know that exploration takes more years, then followed by environmental, will come and assess what will happen. Then the construction takes between 1 to 3 years, and after that the operation. The operation goes up to 30 years or more. And after that comes the closure whenever everything finished.
Henry Odwar, the former chairman of the Mining Committee in South Sudan's National Assembly, says the government needs to regulate ongoing small-scale artisan mining companies that are already operating illegally in the country.
We already have gold-paying mines, and that is through the artisanal practice. What we need are policies and practices that has to emanate from the Ministry of Mining, so that that industry, the section of artisanal mining, is effective.
The SPLM-IO appointed lawmaker says South Sudan can learn more from Sudan and Ghana. The two countries are among the success stories in mineral management. Ajoni Perputuaya Paya is the vice president of South Sudan Law Society and a legal advisor to President Salva Kiir. Perputuaya says the government and communities should first agree on land issues to develop the mining industry.
The unresolved tension between the state ownership of oil and mineral sources and individuals and community ownership of the land surface presents a fundamental dilemma to the mining sector.
She says the mining industry must not be politicized. She says it's no secret that forces in the country's recent conflict targeted oil fields.
Implementation of existing laws, however, is not sufficient to transform South Sudan's oil wealth into a driver of peace and sustainable peace in South Sudan. With the devastation and the suffering caused by the conflict that erupted in December 2013, more drastic measures must be considered to minimize the destabilizing impact of oil revenue in the hands of the political leadership.
The presidential advisor says the government should deposit 3% of its oil revenues in an independently monitored bank account for surrounding communities located near mining sites in order to reduce tensions between the government and host communities. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The chairperson of the African Union Commission, Nkosa Dlamini Zuma, welcomes last weekend's announcement of a unilateral cessation of hostilities by Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan states for a period of 4 months. The African Union is urging the political parties meeting in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to sign a roadmap accord aimed at ending conflict in Sudan. Mubarak Adol is the spokesperson of the political parties meeting in Addis Ababa. He says his group had a positive meeting with international envoys about outstanding issues in the country.
This meeting was to put our view that why you are not, why you didn't sign the roadmap, put it and very clear the point that if he is supposed to be attached to the national dialogue, then we can join and to sign the roadmap. Actually, we sent our proposal so that to be attached, and we sent the letter to President Amiki in the name of the Sudan Call Group, the four organizations, and we are waiting what will happen and what is their reply. If they accepted that we are going to join and to sign.
Adol says the opposition parties and the armed groups are demanding that the proposed dialogue over Sudan's political future be held in Addis Ababa.
For three national dialogues should be convened in Addis Ababa, facilitated by the AUHCID, and that will include all the Sudanese opposition, including the government.
The African Union says the signing of the roadmap by all political parties in the country will allow the parties to resume negotiations and reach agreement on outstanding issues in Sudan. VOA fellow Nadia Taha contributed to this report. Finally, we return to South Sudan, where women and girls gathered today at Nyakuron Cultural Center in Juba to commemorate International Day for the Elimination of Sexual Violence in Conflict. The celebrations were marked by speeches against gender-based violence. Participants say they hope for the day when sexual violence is no longer prevalent in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio has this report once again.
Girls from St. Thomas Primary School perform a song entitled End Sexual Violence Against Women at Nyakran Cultural Center. The title is also the theme of today's event, organized by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS. Mary Ayen Majok, chairperson of the Gender, Peace and Reconciliation Committee in South Sudan's parliament, says sexual violence has become a tool used by the country's warring parties.
Sexual violence in conflict is a weapon of war that is as deadly as any bullet and as destructive as any bomb. Sexual violence in conflict is a violation of human rights and of international humanitarian law in the context of an armed conflict.
Majok says the government of South Sudan has ratified the United Nations Convention on Sexual Violence and therefore must be committed to ending the crime of sexual assault in the country.
The objective of this day is to raise awareness of the need to put an end to conflict-related sexual violence. Therefore, the Republic of South Sudan is determined to end all forms of sexual violence against women and men.
Angelina Daniel-Sika is the regional director of an organization called End Impunity. She says sexual violence has many lasting, horrible physical and psychological effects on women and girls, and many cases of sexual violence go unpunished in South Sudan.
In cases where reported or documented, only few perpetrators were temporarily, detained before being set free.
Sika says perpetrators are sometimes only asked to pay compensation for their crime.
How can you compensate my health that is already affected? How can we compensate the mental problem and damage that women have already experienced? Therefore, I call upon the United Nations Mission in South Sudan to strengthen of the monitoring, analysis and reporting and engage with the government to achieve time-bound commitment to end the use of the sexual violence, not only in conflict, but in post-conflict as we continue to observe this activity.
Julia Onyaki Adigo is a lawyer and member of South Sudan Women's Network. She says it's time women in South Sudan stand up and fight for their rights against sexual violence.
If your husband mistreated you, even if he's a minister, you should talk about the truth. You should ask for your right. Nobody will give you a right until you talk about your right. If I was raped, don't say that I'm shy to tell the truth that I was raped. If you don't tell the truth that you are raped, you will not get a good judgment or a rule of law.
The occasion has a special importance to South Sudan because of fresh memories of brutal sexual violence against many women and girls during the two-year conflict. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. I am John Tanza in Washington. We now leave you with the song Mungu Si by J.M. Kennedy. See you again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Walolo, badi walele, badi lama ikadusia, miobo adusia, izi mungu nipoya, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si, miobo adusia. Miobu adusia matipila, izi mungu nipoya, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si. Miobu adusia, izi mungu nipoya, katedwe warungo niti otolu mungu si. Katro waliuniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, izi mungu matia. Katro waliuniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zi mungu matia.